Hello again, and welcome to the InfoVenture Podcast, a podcast for, by, and about founders and the hellish nightmare lives they lead. Hey there, this week I've got the wonderful pleasure of sitting down with Mr. Doug Epperly. He is a fascinating executive, has dealt with some extremely serious management of large areas. I think we're dozens of distribution centers, managing all kinds of complex supply chain issues, going into, the modern era, I think is very fascinating to see through the eyes of leadership, you know, what that looked like and some of the brutal decisions that had to be made. So I always enjoy spending time with Doug. We call him our silent assassin, and I think you'll see why. Please give it up for the founder and president of Merchant Boxes, Mr. Doug Epperly. Well, Doug, it's lovely to have you here. I have often referred to Doug as our dangerous ninja executive. That I think is, I have to tell you, Doug, I am a student of the executive art through Drucker and others. And I got to tell you, I am consistently impressed with how you operate, buddy. And I think it comes partly from a lifetime of just being a legitimate, you know, executive. I think, you know, you and I talked about this a lot in the interview, but like, I have so much respect for, the kind of folks that can, you know, run a large going concern for a significant amount of time, and the kind of folks that run those organizations, it requires such an enormous amount of all kinds of different skills, but most of them, you know, emotional and dealing with people. And, and it's also interesting because I think that kind of person generally gets close to zero sympathy from anyone, right? because crying a river, right?
Right.
But, you know, nobody feels for the guy that has to make layoff decisions or things of that nature. Is extremely serious, and you're trying to do the very best you can. You lose any sort of empathy or sympathy from the rest of the world, sadly, when you take on the weight of it. You know, it's just fascinating. I can't say enough how impressed I am with the way that you operate. It's truly inspiring to me, and I've been consistently impressed.
It's very, very kind of you to say so. I'm enjoying what we're doing here. I mean, we're having a lot of fun and things like that. And that's I think you probably noticed I'm not the most talkative guy in the room when we have meetings. So I've often been told, you know, it's in board meetings and stuff when Doug speaks, everybody stops because he doesn't speak very often. So not by design, I just listen a lot and then process and then speak it out. So, you know, so good luck. This is, you know, a little bit of a struggle for me to get out there and just have that conversation. I've never done anything like it, but I know you did whiskey with Whiffy. So, and I think I told you I'm more of a gin guy than a whiskey guy. So, so tonight we're doing Bombay and Boxes with Doug.
Cheers, Doug. Yeah, rock on.
I poured
and beer too. For the horses tonight, I imagine.
Yeah, you know, they're lined up. It's a beautiful day here in South Carolina, so it's they're good for a few more hours, and then I'll have to do my nightly barn duties here in 2 hours. So.
Beautiful. Well, I think I have, you know, possibly the opposite problem. Learning how to shut up is an interesting skill. I have one note on my monitor here. It says listen.
Listen.
Because I need the constant reminder. And so I'm staring at it all day long, trying to do my best.
That's funny. You have a note on yours that says listen, and I actually have a note on mine, and it was written by my daughter, and all it says is be nice to people.
So, wow, I think that's a better note, probably.
So, you know, so that says a lot, I think, right there. So.
Yeah. So Doug, I know you picked up a lot of skills over time, and I am very excited to kind of dig in with you some of the story and how Mr. Doug Epperly got going and some of those really interesting points in the career. I think you've got a really fascinating one dealing with, you know, the modernization of the global supply chain, you know, and I think you're kind of front row seat to it. So I think that's super fascinating for anybody that's at all interested in global commerce, managing supply chain, and, you know, really the American economy is what, you know, 70%+, and I hate this word, but they use it, consumer based. So, I mean, you know, somebody that's kind of seen at the highest level what that looks like, I'm sure there's a lot that we can dig into, but, you know, maybe take us to the start and sure. How you got going and you know, how that started to evolve for you.
Well, interestingly enough, and, you know, and I don't know that I come across this way, but I actually was studying to be an accountant. Is where I started in college. Took accounting as my course of study and graduated, you know, was ready to graduate, headed to the CPA exam when I absolutely decided that the thought of being in an office all day doing numbers was enough to make me kill myself. So I made a game time decision and pulled out into and went into retail instead when I left college. And so I spent a lot of time managing grocery stores and did that for a while, moved into hard lines and, you know, managed a couple different large chains of you know, retail stores, doing soft goods and hard goods and all those kind of things. And ended up running a store here in the Carolinas after having moved around a bit. And it was at that point I just decided that retail was going to be the end of me. Customers are tough. And, you know, it's one of those, you get the ultimatum from your wife that says, look, either get out of retail and be home holidays and be home some. So it was funny because we had a snack bar in the store and the cookie guy came once a week, you know, and delivered an order of cookies. And I thought, you know what, that's got to be the best gig going right there. And so I looked them up. And Otis Funkmeyer, the cookie company, and they were running, they had a distribution center here. And so they were looking for a distribution center manager. I thought, you know what, this is it. I'm pulling the ripcord. I'm out of retail. And so I went to work for them and started running the distribution center here in the Charlotte, in the Carolinas. And a team, you know, we had little cookie trucks. We were running around everywhere and doing the cookies, and you know, life was great and good. And did that for a while, and you know, I was fortunate enough to move up from running the local distribution center to getting district manager to regional manager and all those kind of things. And then, you know, one day this guy walks into my office and he says, "Is anybody sitting at that desk?" There was an empty desk in my office, and I said, "Doug." No, he said, "Okay, I'll take that desk." I said, "Okay, well, who are you?" And he said, "Oh, I'm the new vice president of the company. I'll be running the nationwide distribution system." I went, "Okay, so we're going to share an office." And this guy was like, you know, three levels up for me, right? And so I was like, "Okay." So he moved into the office, and you know, I started learning the business from him. He was conducting business. He was running this national company. I was listening, kind of became his right arm, and worked with him for a long time. And eventually he decided that he was moving on. And the company had been making some moves to maybe start downsizing the organization a bit. And so I thought, you know what? No, we're not going to do this. And so I got on the plane and I flew to Brooklyn, California. And I walked into the office of the CEO and I said, "John, I understand you're looking at taking this thing down." And I said, "You know what? That's the worst thing you could possibly ever do. I believe you can build something amazing here, and I'd like the shot." And he said, "Well, first of all, that's pretty ballsy just to walk into my office and do that." So he said, "Guess what? I'm going to give you a shot." So I became the vice president, GM of the Otis Funkmeyer Direct Business Unit. We had 57 distribution centers coast to coast. I had 600 trucks on the road. And had a team of probably 800 folks that were out there. At that time, I'm dating myself here big time, we didn't even have computers in the offices. This was like, you know, back in the 90s. And so we were handwriting orders and handwriting invoices and calling customers on the phone and doing all those kind of things. So we set about to modernize the business and grow it up and did. And it was fantastic. Built, that's where I learned ability. And yeah, that's one of the skills that I think I probably bring to the table is being able to build a solid team. And I think you probably learned by now, I'm definitely not an ivory tower kind of guy that just sits and gives orders and does those kind of things. Absolutely. I roll up my sleeves and jump in, much like you do, and work the business myself. That's, titles don't mean a lot to me. It's about let's just get it done. And so I took that role and did that and ran that for a while. We made it wildly profitable. It was one of the most profitable pieces of business that the company had. We were doing, probably $125 million in revenue. We were throwing off about 20% EBITDA, which in the DSD business is unheard of.
Nope.
And, well, we were doing cookies. I mean, cookies are a cash cow, right? I mean, it doesn't take a lot to make a cookie. Sugar, flour, water, maybe some chocolate. And
don't tell my better half of them.
Yeah, it was amazing. And we were selling them like crazy. Built some great programs. We're doing fundraising. But one of the best businesses that I actually got into and still am linked to today is DECA in the high schools, the Distributive Education Clubs of America. We became their national sponsor and sponsored their conventions. And I worked with them, still something I'm very passionate about today, with kids in school learning business and learning life skills and learning about presentations and how to do those kind of things. So it was a lot of fun doing those kind of things. So yeah, we built a great team and built a business and was running it. And, during that time, the gentleman that owned the company had sold part of it off to a private equity company and then ended up selling him and the private equity company, then sold it to another private equity company. And we were just getting ready to take the company public, had been working on all the due diligence to go public and do those things when a company from Ireland, the Irish Agricultural Wholesale Society, swooped in and bought the company. They've been buying up food companies here in the U.S. for a while. They bought La Brea Bakeries and Otis and several other companies as well. We're building, building their little kingdom here. And so they decided at that point that DSD wasn't strategic to the business going forward and that they wanted to transition out of that business model all into broadline distribution. So basically, 750 people were going to be losing their jobs, and they're standing there looking at me. So that was probably, as you can imagine, where I one of the toughest challenges I've done. Learned a lot about empathy, learned a lot about managing through crisis, learned a lot about managing people. And so it was an interesting thing to go through to actually shutter that business and move it all into broadline distribution. But we did it successfully, transferred the volume. And that's actually where I moved into logistics at that point. And the company then said, we're combining all these companies into one. And we need a North America logistics organization and asked me to take on the project. So that's where I learned a lot about logistics and supply chain. So got into that and started moving, the companies all together to come to one organization. Ended up out in Utah, spent some time out there. I've been to Utah, out on the Wasatch Front, and built a great little facility out there, housed all of our customer service and transportation, warehousing, inventory, all that together. And I built that. And, that's where I learned a lot about consensus building and how to bring people along on a journey, if you will, because I had to kind of take and there was a vision of what we wanted to create. But as you know, with every company, especially you, I'm sure you've seen this. Every time you look at a business, the way they're doing everything is the best way to be doing anything. And so to go in and say, great, but we're going to do it this way instead, doesn't always work out very well.
So it's a very expensive proposition.
It truly is. It truly is. And immediately people, they get their shackles up. They don't want to talk. They start shutting down. So, that's where, I think we have to learn to really engage with people and start building, kind of relationships. And I learned in that in that time frame to really start building those relationships with people and kind of creating a vision and going to that place and convincing them to follow you, not necessarily telling them they had to go somewhere, they had to do something. So, again, it was a great project. We combined about 7 companies into one, and built the organization out there, and it was doing well. There's always challenges within business, but you execute the project, put a few $1 million in the bank, you survive it. That's how I ended up with all these great hairs. I'm not the only one to look. But that gave me the opportunity to move into global supply chain, which was really where I found a lot of my passion and enjoy doing. So I moved from there into taking care of some global QSR accounts, and where we were producing food here in the U.S., but shipping it around the world. And so that gets really interesting with, a lot of the different regulations. And
things. No kidding.
Especially from a food perspective. And unfortunately, you find out at that point, too, that, that the U.S. is the worst regulated food supply in the world. So you really have to up your game if you're going to play in other markets. So, but I learned a lot about shipping and global shipping and shipping foods around the world. And, in that time, I had the opportunity to travel the world as well. And spend a lot of time in some fantastic places. I was all through Europe, spent a lot of time throughout the Middle East, in Asia, across my favorite place in the world, Australia, and New Zealand. So it was an amazing journey and got to do that. And did that for a long time, traveling a lot, about 90% of my time, and having fun. And then COVID came into play. And I was actually in Dubai at the World Food Show when the lockdown.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, the lockdown started, and so I was juggling flights. I was able to make it from Dubai into London, and then through Heathrow and back into Newark just as the lockdown happened. So I was like,
"Wow!"
So get back home, and the world changed forever. So. And during that time, the company was going through a lot of iterations and changes, had been through multiple leadership changes, a lot of things happening. They were preparing to do a little sell-off of the company and sell off the business unit. I've been there, same company, continuously employed for 28 years, and decided it was time for me to branch out on my own. And so, and I think I mentioned this, I left there, took some time off. And as you know, I live on a horse farm, so spent some time out here and relaxing, and then started my own company, E3 Enterprises, and did some consulting for that. Ended up buying some franchises that are in development going there, and then I came across you, and I thought what you guys were doing was like super cool and super interesting, and so I wanted to be a part of it. So here we are today, having this conversation. So just kind of a little bit of the journey that I went through to get where I'm at today. So it's been fun.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I remember walking through DFW and it was just a ghost town.
Yes.
It was like the weirdest experience ever.
Yeah.
It was very surreal. We tend to forget how crazy it got.
At
the very bottom of it.
It was bad. It was bad. I mean, I literally thought I was going to end up getting stuck in Dubai. Now, there's worse places in the world to be. Right? but it's a little far from home. So I was very fortunate to be able to get back and when all that hit. But yeah, coming through the airports, you could see the world was changing. I mean, right before everybody's eyes, right? Yeah, I mean, people were scared. And it was one of those step change things that you see in your life. So it was interesting to go through that. But yeah, and then it was really interesting to go from traveling 90% of the time to not traveling at all.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it was Monday morning. I was at Charlotte Douglas International Airport every Monday morning. Parking attendant knew my name, took my keys, the gate agent, the TSA guy, the flight attendants, it was all that kind of thing, right? And what was that movie? The Clooney movie, Up in the Air?
Yeah. Get your million miles in.
Exactly. So, it was a lot of fun, but the world changed pretty quickly. So, changed the game.
Yeah, no kidding. when I tell people the story of finding Doug, I say it's a very Roman story. You know, they have their generals that go off and into their ranches, their hillside estates, and they're called upon by society for another rodeo. So I very much think of it as Doug Epperly, the Roman general. It's called back into action.
That's funny. That's funny. I wish it were that romantic out on the farm sometimes.
Well, it certainly is for me. So, you know,
it's fun. You know, you look back on your life, Sam, and you can see those moments where, you know, you where the road forked and you made a decision. And mine's easy. I look back and I remember the day my wife came to me and she's, you know, we have a daughter and she had been in all these things. And she said, "What do you think about Abby taking some horseback riding lessons?" I was like, "How hard could that be? Sounds good." And boom, that was a fork in the road. And I didn't even so before I knew it, I owned one horse and then two and then, you know, a farm. And here we are. So it's perfect. Wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, I was actually out at the little family, tiny little ranchita past weekend. And so many memories, man. I mean, that was some of the best time of my life, you know, growing up out there during the summers and just you in the field, you know. And did I tell you the story of training up the donkey?
No.
They had a donkey out there, and I was so bored, you know. I tried to, and then ultimately got pretty good at you know, training him. I had no idea what I was doing. But then they had an actual horse trainer come out there later on, and he was training the horses. And they asked, "Hey, can you help Sam train the donkey?" He's like, "Yeah, I don't do that anymore." I don't think so. But I watched him and kind of learned. And then I was messing around with the donkey for a while, and eventually got him to do like side steps and everything. You know, he was good. Yeah, he was good.
Very cool. And,
but now when he sees me, he just tries to bite me. So I think
he's like, "I remember you."
So. Yeah, this guy.
It's funny. So they still have the donkey out there.
Yeah, he's still kicking, man. He's still kicking.
That's
he's been out there. He's the king of the place.
But
one of the things that you said, I think, really struck a chord with me, and you know, in the history, was talking about, you know, going to folks and changing what they're doing. You know, there's this whole field of study, change management, and it takes all these, you know, well-paid consultants, and they do all these things. Because, you know, I think people, and I've seen it, you know, as an auditor, you know, recommending process changes, et cetera. People, especially in, you know, larger, more mature, kind of more stale, if you will, organizations. I mean, I think they view it very much as a threat to their very safe, predictable, you know, life. And I got to tell you, I very rarely see the same thought process here, where everybody's just like, "What is the best way to do it?" You know what I mean? Where, you know, it's more team oriented than you know, just personally trying to play block, you know, blocking and you know, protecting the turf. So that, in addition to a million other things, I think has been really interesting and quite nice, because like you, I experienced a smaller degree, but experienced a lot of that, and it's really interesting. It's very difficult to drive change in big organizations, because there's a layer of the senior folks that have been there, but they don't want to progress any. And they, you know, you can fool yourself, but they really have all the control. And to your point, if you don't build the consensus, nothing's going to happen. So, you know, I've both seen all those emails from the ivory tower that just get thrown in the trash, you know?
No, those are truly the power brokers, right? The folks that have been there for forever, don't want to progress any further in their career. They know what they're doing. They're happy, you know, homeostasis, it's all good. And, you know, so those are the ones you have to really learn to build a bridge with. That's what's been so cool about this whole journey with Nth Ventures so far is, yeah, to your point, everyone is really, they're just coming to the table. Like, what do you need? How can we help? What's the best way to get this done? And I think what's really interesting is you see the evolution every day of the business. Right. So, I mean, some businesses could take forever just to make a decision. And here it's like, you know, we've evolved. I mean, January, I came on board, and it's April. I don't know how that's happened, but Totally. You know, I mean, we were talking about merchant boxes being, you know, being a box supplier to the e-com industry. And across the last 4 months, we have evolved. I mean, just it's unbelievable where we are now in terms of creating experiential packaging, creating, you know, the platforms that we decided to go with, building a business, building a website, building a team. I mean, it's just been amazing, that journey, to watch how things move so fast here.
Yeah.
There's nobody is standing in the way of anybody. If there's a roadblock there, remove it and move on, which is, you know, which is, I find fascinating. After being with a, you know, multi-billion dollar global company for a while, when you had to have, you know, 3 requisitions and 4 sign-offs to buy pens, I mean, you know, it's a little different here. And that's kind of cool with what's been created here.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about a swag bag for Nth Venture, and Ian, and I fully support this. He was talking about having a branded bag to breathe in, because, you know, when people first come on, you know, I know I certainly am breathing through a bag, you know, and you know, it's pretty wild.
It is.
But, you know, I think that the thing to drive home is that, you know, it's kind of bewildering to see all these people coming to you. Like, how can I, you know, and it can be kind of, after, you know, I was, you know, military and government, it's extremely different. If you want to get something done, you got to be breaking down the door. But, right. You know, here there's so much, there's a significant amount of inbound internally, and the outbound is all up to you, you know, really, you know, when you're starting something new. So it takes a while to, like, you know, become the karate master, and, you know, like, and make that flow through, go the other way almost, right. You know, if that makes any sense. So, it's fascinating here. So tell me, you kind of opened the door a little bit, so I'll let you go through it. So tell the world a little bit about, what you've built, what you guys are, chewing on, and where Merchant Boxes is going.
Well, it's like I said, it's been a fascinating journey just to get this far to where we are right now. And I think, you know, what started out is that original vision of helping the e-com business. And I think it was a connected dots, right, through all the different businesses and adventures and those kind of things to get to that point. And when we started, immediately, you know, the level of creativity of the team is crazy, what people are bringing to the table. And like I said, just the culture that's here at Inventors has been interesting. When, you know, I first started, and people coming out of the woodwork going, what do you need? How can I help? What do you need? And I'm like, whoa, because I'm not used to that, right? So, but then you realize their motives are very pure, and, you know, they're here to help. So we started an ideation, if you will, and started kind of creating this vision of, where do we think this could go, and where was there a gap? What's our unique selling proposition? What makes us different? And we decided it was time to capitalize on the unboxing experience that's taken the world by storm. People, and we talked about the pandemic, right? People are at home, but people still want to have that experience at home. And so many people have successfully been able to transition into that. We thought, very successful, let's start looking down that and follow that path. But then we identified platforms that are being underserved, and don't have the ability to have those experiences for their customers. And so we've identified a few different interesting areas of business, ones I never thought I would be kind of getting into, but
here I didn't think so either. I was very surprised, Doug.
you didn't see that coming, did you? So we've kind of really aligned ourselves fairly strongly with the cannabis industry as a starting point, as a platform. It's highly underserved market, highly fragmented, but building brands with them is incredibly important, right? And people are passionate about it. They're passionate about what they do. They're passionate about what they sell. And so we've been able to align with some of those, some of those companies, and we're building business. Now, it's a platform, right? It builds the playbook that we can then replicate into other industries, spirits and wine. Is one that we really want to get into, personal care, corporate swag, to your point, some of those. But, you know, it's about building a business where people can have a true experience. When they get their package at home, and you know what? Amazon's done it better than anybody in the world, right? Don't want to take anything away from them. But it's a cardboard box with a pillow pack, you know, a couple plastic pillow packs in it when you get it. Not really a big experience to open that box. You kind of get what you want. We on the other hand, want to take that and really elevate that experience and, you know, create those customer experiences via the packaging where they can go through the process of opening that box and enjoying that experience, getting that hit of dopamine and understanding, you know, that they're having something special here, where that box even becomes a keepsake, you know, something that you put up and you keep and you show people. And it's been amazing since we've been on this journey, how many people I've, you know, told them what we're doing. They're like, oh my God. And they reach under their desk or somewhere and they grab this box that they got and they want to show you how it works and how it opened up and what it really meant. I mean, they're passionate about this. So we think we've hit on something. And, you know, we're building a team. We've got an amazing group of folks coming along with us on this journey. We hired a great designer, Rick, who's leading our design team, Rick Fitzgerald. We've got Jason on board doing our supply chain, and we're fortunate enough just to bring Nikki on to help us with customer success as well. So we're pumped, we're positioned, and you know what, our go live is here. We have customers that are circling the funnel, as I'll say, that are ready to drop in. And so it's been a lot of fun, and we're going to create something really cool. I think the most interesting thing is, you know, most packaging companies, they want to sell you what they can produce, obviously, on their own lines. And we're very much agnostic to that. And we're saying it in our messaging that we can design what you can imagine, and then we can source what we design. So the sky's kind of the limit. And that's really kind of the mantra that we're using for the business. So it's been an exciting, and like I say, that's happened within, you know, 4 months, less than 2 months. So it's been a lot of fun. So
really become almost like the Disney of you know, of goods, to some extent, you know, creating that experience and then actually producing it and making it come all the way. I got to tell you, when I saw Rick's, your first client's designs,
right,
I was blown away. You know, yeah. I mean, I was like, man, that looks so good. I was shocked. And I was telling the guys the other day that, you know, you better watch out because Doug has assembled a significant portion of the high-speed packaging talent in the United States. I mean, it's kind of a murderer's row of folks that you've assembled there, and it's an crazy thing to behold. And you know, I think, you know, already pre-launch, you're getting the whispers of the industry all turned on.
Yeah, we kind of been in ninja mode, very quiet, you know, kind of playing the game and learning a lot as we go. And like you said, bringing in some great talent, and which I think speaks to, you know, adventures and everything that's happening here. So we're pretty excited about it. And I think we've got a good shot. I really do. I'm excited to see, you know, where we go and what this brings into us. And, you know, we'll build and refine the playbook. And the cannabis industry is, you know, really an interesting one. We got some fantastic support at our advisory board.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of talent there, people coming in and wanting to help and bringing a lot of advice to the table and clients and customers. So we're pretty excited about this, and I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's definitely an underserved market. And I've talked before about how we've thought through which areas to get into. And one of the key components of it is an area of friction that's new to the market, that we think is going to be sustained for one reason or another, at least long enough to give us a good foothold. And I can't say that there's a better example than the burgeoning cannabis, legitimate cannabis industry, where, you know, you've got so many new brands and so many different brands and so many different lines of and types of products, and there's so much packaging work to go into it. And typically a lot of them are, you know, up and comers, at least relative to the huge, you know, prime package producers of the world. I mean, it's difficult to get the foot in the door. So it's very interesting. And I think it's a perfect application of what you guys are after, even beyond the fact that of the social portion of it, which I'm sure you'll find a lot of support around here for.
It's going to be, yeah, because I mean, I think it is about those experiences, right? And so many of the companies now, the cannabis companies, they're starting, you know, as the laws continue to change, they're able to do home delivery, right? And so when they're able to do that, then that certainly creates an opportunity to really put that brand, you know, it's always about getting your brand in someone's home. And once you're successful doing that and they see that brand on a consistent basis, then you've got a good opportunity to recreate that business over and over and over again. So, you know, when they start doing those kind of deliveries and things like that, we can really help build that. And that's true with any industry though, right? I mean, as we look at spirits and wine, you know, we're talking about bringing up some of those really boutique distilleries that are now up and coming with some fantastic whiskeys and moonshines and some of those things that are now coming onto the market. So we can play in that space as well and create those experiences for people to have at home without having to go out. And so I think it's going to be really cool to kind of, you know, see this path and see where it goes. And of course, you know, you can't talk about it without talking about the metaverse as well.
Right? I mean, sure.
So many things now are becoming, you know, people are actually selling within the metaverse and, you know, they're having these experiences. So if you can create an experience similar to that, where it's virtual, right? You know, they can scan a box or scan a bag or do something and create this virtual reality where they can engage with you and your brand. I mean, you know, that's where you're going to win. So we're exploring all of those options as potential areas of growth for the company as we go forward.
Yeah, I think that's very exciting. You know, I almost think of it as kind of like the almost melding the digital and physical world. Yeah. You know, I think that's part of the initial experience of almost like an in-home upsell. But you know, if you love product, you love what you're getting, you want to know more. I know that the Tecovas boots, I guess, when you open those, it's like this whole experience, you know, right. They've got this whole branded box. It's not, you know, and you know, you open it and they give you some free little deal, you know, God knows what it's going to be. And, you know, there's some like handwritten note from someone at the factory and they do this whole deal. And, you know, creating that kind of like linkage through QR codes or what have you, I think has been really successful for them. I know for at least me personally, I just worked for them.
Yeah, you feel special, right? You feel connected to the company. You feel, you know, and then you want to have that experience again and again. So you're going to continue to reorder and be a customer, and that's what it's all about. So, you know, it's interesting. We started out as a box company and our packaging company, and we've evolved into, you know, we create customer experiences via packaging, which is really what it's evolved to. So a lot of fun to get there to that point so far. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. I think there's some good stuff ahead for us for sure.
And yeah, I'm certainly picking up on the enormous humility you're laying down there. So one of the things, Doug, that I think is that I picked up on what you said was, you know, talking about going through, you know, some of these experiences where instead of, you know, command and control, you're really, you know, leading from I'm gonna go down this road and hopefully you're gonna follow me down. I think it was a Colin Powell quote talking about leadership that is kind of famous in the Army, where you know you've achieved true leadership when soldiers follow you just out of curiosity.
Yeah,
it takes a while to kind of unpack that, but I mean, there's, you know, there's an enormous amount of trust that goes into that. And I found that to be exactly true. You know, some of the best leaders I've ever seen are just, they're like, look, I'm doing this. And, yeah. You know, I'm going down this road. Come with me or don't, but this is what I'm doing. And, yeah. You know, the kind of folks that are willing to follow you there are going to be exactly the kind of folks that you want with you generally.
Right.
And so, you know, I've found that to be enormously helpful. I mean, you know, you've been here at ETH for a while, and you know my style. I don't think it's typically productive at all to issue directives or policy or anything. Yeah. I mean, you know, I just think it's typically 9 times out of 10 very counterproductive. And you know, I think you've kind of touched on exactly what the central part of that quote is. So as part of that, though, tell me a little bit about you know, you've had to deal with some pretty tough blows managing large teams and through difficult times. Tell me a little bit about how you evolved as a leader over time. You know, what did you bring to the table? You think, I know I'm asking you to do kind of a self-assessment here, but, you know, what did you bring to the table that kind of helped you in terms of qualities do that? And then what did you kind of learn over time? I think it's going to be interesting for the younger folks out there thinking about becoming a leader, stepping up in their organization and what that really takes, and is it even worth it? You know, so
right.
Tell us a little bit about that. Yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of it evolved early on in my career where I was co-workers with a lot of these folks. So we became friends, you know, and then I moved from there into the management role. So they become, you know, then it's because it gets really weird, right? And you know this, they're no longer just your friends, right? Now they work for you. So it gets kind of odd. But, you know, one of the things I always tried to do was cultivate that very much that spirit of leadership that says, you know what? Look, we're all on the same team. We're all rowing in the same direction. We're all going to the same place. Let's not worry about job title. Let's go get a job done, right? And let's make things happen. And let me give you the tools that you need. And I always felt that if I made my people successful, my team successful, I was going to be successful. So, and that's where I think I mentioned at one point, you know, it's, you go there and you make a business case for it, right? And you don't tell people where to go. And so that was kind of how I evolved my leadership style, was just taking those people that were peers that now find themselves in the very awkward position of being, you know, an employee and trying to evolve those relationships and save those relationships. And so I was, you know, the easiest way to do that is to be where the people are. And that's what I always did. I was the guy on the dock in the morning. You know, I was talking to my drivers. I was talking to people. I had no problem unloading a truck if that's what needed done. So, you know, you build respect with your team when you do those things, when they see you engaged in the process. So, you know, if I had to give any advice to people coming up in management today, it would be do that. You know, roll up your sleeves, get out there and meet your people where they are and build those relationships. And they're gonna see you, they're gonna value you, and they're gonna follow you. I think, you know, I mentioned at one point where we were transitioning the business from, you know, a DSD system into broadline distribution, and there were a lot of people impacted. And I recall to this day that conversation. We had a national conference call with hundreds of people on the call. And we had to tell them, I had to tell them that the business was changing and that over the course of the next several months, most, if not all of them, would need to find, you know, different opportunities. I always said we were making them available to the industry. And, you know, so we had to go through that transition. But, you know, I was proud to say that in that moment, you know, and I told them in that call, you know, we've always conducted ourselves with grace and with class and with humility, and we're going to continue to do that through this process. And I'm so proud of that team, even to this day, that we went through that process together. I still have some great friends that went through that with me. You know, people that I'm still in touch with today, many years later. But, you know, I never had any issues, people angry, people, you know, leaving, people mad, those kind of things. It was like, all right, we're going to go through this together. And we did. And so, you know, that's probably the biggest lesson I learned is, you know, you have to meet your people where they are and you have to be alongside them. You don't lead from the top. And I think that's my style today. And I think you probably see that. We just
absolutely
learn where we go. So, you know, that's kind of how I evolved to be who I am, where I am, guess today, and do what I do.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, which is that, you know, I don't think it's possible really to live up to the demands of being a good leader if you don't know what it's like on the front lines. You know, it can very quickly turn into a, you know, Nero Caligula situation on a tiny scale, you know, and it can get pretty rough. And I think we have the extreme luxury here of so much tight alignment that, you know, I think it can be easy to, you know, just think that that's going to do all the work for us. And it does to a great extent. It does a lot of the heavy lifting, but, you know, we still have to maintain a really deep core of, of leadership and understanding how that works, et cetera. You know, I think it's, you know, we're almost playing on easy here, just because of the, you know, we're not asking for more from people and giving them the same amount, you know. But I do think that in every environment, military, what have you, I think it's deeply important to understand how that works, at least a little bit.
I'm sure you see that from your, I mean, with your military experience, right? I mean, who's the great leaders, right? And who are the people following? And I mean, to your point, I think they've got to follow you. It's because they want to, not because they have to. And that's what creates that different environment. And I think that's what's interesting here with Ventures and with what we're doing is everybody is in the boat, rowing in the same direction. They have the same goals, the same end game, the motivations are the same. And I think, you know, especially the team that truly, truly, truly wants to be successful, and, you know, they're welcoming and they want to move things forward. So I think, you know, the vision is the same for everybody. And that certainly helps, because that's not always the case in a lot of companies today.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's so funny because, you know, we read about the great resignation every day, you know, and folks leaving. So, you know, we have to, you know, we're turning folks down left and right. And, you know, our retention is through the roof. And I think it's really, you know, if they gave people ownership, I think really part of my theory is that, you know, when you're at home, it's a hell of a lot harder to take somebody screaming at the phone at you and demanding this and that. And, you know, you're in your home office. Man, this guy on the phone seems to really be an asshole. I wonder why I'm still listening to him. So yeah. I think that was this huge psychological burden lifted, and so much of that callus just kind of was removed, that, you know, we're seeing the kind of folks that, not necessarily had a problem in corporate America, but always had like a little bit of a yearning and just to see, you know, if I really took the reins myself, what would that look like? So, I don't know. I'm always fascinated with, you know, we certainly couldn't have done this without the pandemic, you know, whatever silver lining that may be. Yeah. You know, it's very interesting, you know, the psychology of folks, and how they relate to the workplace. And, you know me, I mean, our whole philosophy and vision here is to try to at least, you know, bend the arc of the universe, as well, you know, make some small impact on what people expect from their work, because it's such a huge portion of your life. And, you know, from most of human history, you derive deep satisfaction out of it, you know, and you reap your own reward as a farmer, what have you, you know, and you can build your own small kingdom, and it's so incredibly fulfilling. And so trying to recreate that with modern tools and a modern working environment where there's such a deep complexity in the world, we have to work together intimately, and the revenue has to come to the team. You know, it's just the nature of the world, unless you want to go solo. And you know, we see a lot of folks, I think, that go freelance and then kind of go back to good corporations or the best ones that they can find, because they miss the team, they miss working with people and dealing with all the clients and having to wear every single hat. And so there's this balance where people are, you know, I think naturally like to come together and get things done, and it's a beautiful thing.
I agree.
To do. Yeah,
absolutely.
But I can tell I'm going down my typical woo-woo lane. So tell me a little bit about what have been some of the challenges, like some of the harder things. You know, we are very much, you know, your team is gerbil number three.
Yeah.
You know, more or less. So, you know, this is not a perfected system. And we overcome a lot of it, I think, with just, you know, the willingness and caliber of folks that are all kind of rowing in the same direction. But tell us a little bit about, you know, what kept you up at night? What were those huge thorns in the side? Totally unexpected. You know, I'm sure some days the eyes were like, you know, going, drinking through the fire hose, as they say. But I think there's a special quality to it that makes it a little bit more real.
Yeah, it truly is. And, yeah, cause you come in fast. I mean, here you start really running fast from day one. I think, you know, I joined on a Monday and the board presentation was on Thursday night. I'll be honest with you. I was like, okay, what the hell have I gotten myself into? But that was probably the first, like, okay, this is going to be interesting kind of thing. But, you know, beyond that, I think, you know, the biggest challenge that we faced in standing up this business is getting people buy into the vision, they understand it, but, you know, we're not looking for people who want a job. You know, we're looking for people who want to help create something and have long-term value as a result of that, and who are willing to, you know, put some stake in the game and who are willing to invest in, you know, themselves in order to do this. And we've been through a lot of folks, some amazing people that we've talked to, and it's just not the right model for them. And that's okay. Because I'd rather find that out up front than, you know, 3 months or 6 months down the road, when they're struggling and it's not working. So, you know, I think that's been part of the process that I've had to kind of figure out as we go too, is how to attract the right people that are, you know, willing to invest in themselves and in this business to be successful. So, beyond that, I'll be honest with you, it's been so much fun. I mean, like you said, I went out on my own. And you know, with my own business for a while, still doing that, you know, with my franchises and things like that. But I missed a lot of that, the camaraderie that really we've built here. And I really wanted to get back into that. And, you know, I think it's been interesting to say, you know, what you mentioned it earlier too, our retention is through the roof. People are coming and they're staying in the face of the Great Resignation. And you have to wonder what made so many people so unhappy that, you know, they're just leaving in droves. But what we're doing here, they're coming and they're staying and they're invested in the success. So I think that's been kind of the upside to it. So when you get to those points where you're going, I'm not really sure I know where we're going, or I'm not really sure of what we're doing, but you see that kind of culture, you know, it's okay. And it really helps to have sounding boards and people you can reach out to, and some of the team that has been built here to really have those conversations. So, you know, I think it's interesting coming from a world of corporate culture, where a lot of rules, a lot of regulations, a lot of those kind of things, a lot of processes in place, to where we're just creating the processes and how we want this to flow that actually makes sense, that are actually logical processes and not just process for the sake of process. So, you know, that's really been kind of fun. You know, I spent the day today drawing the process map, but it was for, you know, how we want to build. We want to build an engine that runs, all right, and not necessarily just because that's the way it's always been. So that's what's different, and that's what's fun about doing what we're doing here. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a journey. Like I said, the world has changed. You know, Zoom calls and video calls and things like that. It used to be I'd jump on a plane and come see you and sit down and have a conversation. And, you know, now we do things so much differently. It's hard to connect to people. So I think you have to really focus on that as well and build those connections so that you know, despite the video conference, you can still have those connections with people. So yeah, that's been the other challenge.
It really requires a really high quality meme game. I think you got to stay on top of the memes.
which there's some pros around here. So I love it. So.
Yeah. Let me ask you another one, you know, so, looking back on it, you know, if you had to give yourself, you know, some advice, you know, as you started out this really fascinating career that you've had, you know, what would that be? You know, what do you think, you know, a kid coming out of college or, you know, mid-20s looking at a career change, you know, what do you think you could tell them that, you know, is not for its own feel-good sake and makes it feel good, but is actually at the end of the day going to, you know, create a life that they can look back on, be proud of, and enjoy having done?
It's a tough question. I mean, you know, there's always the coulda, shoulda, woulda, right? What would I have done differently, and what could I have done differently, and those kind of things. And look, I mean, I think, and you know this, we all are going to make mistakes, right? Things are going to go wrong. Things are going to go south. It's just going to happen. But it truly is how you react to it and how you deal with it is kind of the biggest thing that I've learned. I've made some decisions, you know, would I have done things differently? I knew I didn't want to be an accountant after after getting an accounting degree. But, you know, I didn't really know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And, you know, I still don't know. So I think it's, you know, you always have to keep that hunger and keep that, you know, be true to yourself, find out what your passion is and go do something. And, you know, don't necessarily follow the status quo. You know, I did for a while and then I didn't, and I've been a lot happier since I didn't, than I did. So it's just, you know, figure out what you want to do and go after it and embrace that. And that's, I tell my daughter that all the time. You know, she may not use her degree that she got. That's okay. I don't care. Find what you're passionate about and go after it. So, and I would encourage anyone starting in the industry to do that. Be happy. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And have some fun, for God's sake. It's not that serious. So, you know, it's just not that serious. So, and that'd probably be my advice. And as I look back on my career, I wish there are times when I wish I could have done that better. I really did get stressed and I was really miserable and I was really not happy in certain, you know, in situations and instances. And end of the day, it really adds no value to do that. So you just kind of got to relax a little bit and have a good time.
How can you add 1 second to your life by worrying? I think a smart guy said that. Doug Epperle, the founder and president of Merchant Boxes, thank you very much for spending some time with me tonight and sipping on some spirits with me, sir. It's always a pleasure. Cheers. And I think we're in for a whirlwind with you, buddy.
Great to be part of the journey. So
indeed, buddy. Well, I will see you. I'll see you bright and early. We'll keep cranking here, Doug.
Hey, you listen. It's going down just like this.
This has been an Audley production. Thank you for tuning in. Yeah. Our producer is Matt Wells. Oh. Our audio engineer, David Woji. Uh-huh. I'm your host, Sam Sawhook. Yeah. Please like and subscribe. That helps get the word out. Have a lovely, lovely day. We'll see you next time.